This is the best of the morning stream. Thanksgiving edition, 2011.
Flavorful golden brown turkey is the crowning glory of your holiday dinner table. And real butter helps you serve a butter-baked masterpiece. Here's how to butter-bake your turkey. After stuffing the bird, pat lots of soft butter all over, especially on the drumsticks, breast, and wings. Next, cover the entire turkey with cheesecloth dipped in melted butter to protect it from shrinking in your oven. Then bake it slowly, without a lid, never higher than 300 to 325 degrees. Every half hour, baste with butter. When it's golden brown, you'll serve your family and guests the juiciest, tenderest turkey ever because you use butter. This year, bake your holiday turkey the American Dairy Association way, with real butter.
Add your favorite sausages.
Clip show? We don't need no stinking clip show. Or do we? I don't know. Oh, heck, why not? This is the best of the morning stream.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's another edition of the best of the morning stream. So it's kind of a rough week this week with no new TMS shows, but hopefully this will kind of get you through at least a day or two. And thankfully, it won't be too long until TMS is back on the air with fresh new shows next week. Rob from Chicago here. It's the Thanksgiving edition, and we've got a bunch of great stuff lined up today. Some of it came from the forums, and some of it I just sort of picked out, but it's going to be a lot of fun, so let's get rolling. So it's Thanksgiving time, and I'm guessing quite a few people are traveling, whether it's by car or plane or whatever the case may be. Well, hopefully your travels are nothing like our first clip from show number 51. So this is a story of a trip gone haywire, and while I'm sure it was probably hell on earth at the time, it's fun to listen to in a classic Scott story, so here we go. Clip number one from show number 51, Scott Johnson and his nightmarish travels.
All right, so this was me in Colorado in the parking lot.
Where did I park my car?
I'm just kidding. All right, this is what
happened. That could happen at DIA, too. That would happen.
The year is 2001.
Okay.
And I am traveling back from New Orleans, however you say it. Mm-hmm. My wife's family lives down there. Or they did. They don't anymore, but they did. And we were visiting, and I was there with my daughter, who was then 6 or 7 years old. She is now 17. So it was a while ago. So 10 years ago, yeah. Her and I had it was horrible because we had to leave at 4 o'clock in the morning, drive through a storm, one of the worst rainstorms New Orleans had seen to that point. Get to the airport only to find out that we were going to get delayed. And they had garbage cans all over the airport capturing drips from the ceiling. And the ceiling was literally caving in from water all over the airport. And flights left and right were being canceled or delayed. And ours got delayed, our flight to Chicago. So I thought, all right, because I don't know why we were connecting through Chicago, but we were. And so we had to wait, and we waited, and we waited, and we waited. So what was supposed to be about an hour wait at the airport turned into 3, and then 4 hours, and then 5 hours.
Oh, geez.
We were there at that airport in that nasty, wet, swampy airport for 12 hours straight.
Oh.
And my poor 6-year-old is dying. She, you know, no kid should have to go through that.
No, right.
So finally, we get a flight, and this one goes, it's a different flight. This one goes straight to Denver. And I thought, oh, cool, that new airport, because it was relatively new back then.
Yeah, it was right after, they just about finished it 2 years before that. So
yeah, really new, fresh, brand new airport, big freaking airport.
Yep.
And we thought, all right, sweet, that's good, and that's closer to home. I mean, that's Rocky Mountains. You can almost taste Utah at that point. So I was really excited to get on that flight. But again, this is 12 hours later. It's like, you know, evening or something. Well, yeah, it would have been. It would have been like 4 or 5 in the afternoon by now, because we get there at 4 in the morning. So we get on this plane. We're finally happy. We're going. And by the way, the United flight between New Orleans and Denver, one of the flight attendants was one of the guys that died a few months later.
Oh, no way.
One
really?
Of the planes in New York. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
One of the ones that hit the towers. So it was pretty, that was really weird. That was hard for me to actually deal with for a while because it just was like, ugh, you know, I knew that guy. He brought me a blanket.
Mm.
So that weirded me out for a long time. Still does, actually, if you want the truth. But anyway, yeah. So we take this flight and we get to Denver. Here's where the poop starts to hit the fan. We get out of that plane, and we had missed our connecting flight because of the delays of all the other delays. Mm-hmm. So I was told you need to go to this gate, and the way your new airport is, it's like a giant U, right?
Well, no, it's like a...
How would you describe that shape?
It's like three parallel lines connected by a perpendicular underground train.
Yes, that is correct. It felt like a giant U to me. And the reason it felt like a giant U is because I had to run down to one end of that three lines, get on the underground train, drive over to the other far line, go to the other end of that line on foot, and try to get the ticket or try to get on the plane. So we ran. And we got there, made it, handed the lady the ticket. She goes, oh, this isn't correct. This isn't the right information, something, blah, blah, blah. She goes, no. They told me that all I had to do was transfer into this thing. She goes, no, you need to go to such and such desk and talk to the blah.
Oh, no.
And they'll stamp it. And I said, well, where's that? She goes, oh, it's right here. She shows me a map, complete where I started.
Oh, geez.
So I grab my six-year-old, running, because she's like, you might still make it. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So I'm running through this airport again. I get on the underground train. I'm huffing and puffing. People think I'm dying. My daughter's going, meh. We get over to the other side. I get all the way over there. They're like, you don't need to do this. You should be able to just get right on.
Oh, geez.
And I said, I'm going to kill someone. I told her that. So I'm going to murder someone. Now, post 9/11, that may have been bad to say that.
That might have been bad to say, yeah.
But I said, I'm seriously pissed. You guys are killing me here. This is bad. I'm not going back over there if you're telling me that I'm ready. And what if I get there and they say I'm not? She goes, well, here's how we'll insure it. And she bap, 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 stamps it twice and does some kind of thing. I don't remember what. I'm like, thanks, grabbed it, ran again. All the way back to that other side. Uh-huh. Missed the flight.
Oh.
And the lady's like, yeah, there's another one coming from Zepapapapap. We could transfer you to Bapapap. And I said, okay, when's that happening? That's in 5 minutes.
Oh, geez.
Where's that plane? Back where you started. So I had to run again the other way again. And I'm pitting out, dude. I'm sweating all over the place. Oh, I've never been so pissed in my life.
Oh my God.
Finally got over there. Barely got on that plane. For a second, the lady was confused again. And that was when I just about, you know, I wanted to tear my wiener off and slap her across the face with it. But she goes, and I was just out of my skull pissed. She finally goes, oh, no, this is right. Okay, here you go. Enjoy your flight. And I'm like, F you. And I got on the plane.
Right.
And we got home at, I want to say, midnight Salt Lake time. So from 4 a.m. in the morning. Mm-hmm. It was the worst day of my life, I think.
You probably traveled the distance within the airport. You probably traveled the distance between Denver and Salt Lake, running back and forth.
Yes, I know. I could have walked home. Oh. People always say, "How come you have such good calves?" Because I do have good calves. They're strong, and I've always had good calves. I say, "Oh, it's because of my trip to freaking Denver in 2001. Because I ran up and down that effing thing like 6 times.
Wow,
dude. I hate that airport.
Yeah. Well, blame United.
Yeah, I do blame United. It was the United Delta mix up. Like those two could not get their poop together. And it just was so, because it was, you know, it was one of those things. And I understand how it gets. You got to transfer people and all of that. But dude, airline, they've only gotten worse since then. Airline stuff just sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Sucks. But have a fun trip this weekend.
Thanks.
All right. That's my story. Happy chat room. Are you happy with my dumb story? Did they enjoy that at all? I hope
they did. I think they did. Yeah,
they seem to.
So while we're on the subject of Denver and travel, I couldn't help but pick out this next clip. And the subject of this clip has made many TMS appearances. And if you're a frequent listener of the show, you'll know him better as
the third eagle of the apocalypse and the co-prophet of the end times.
Well, this is the story of the third eagle, and this goes back to show number 76. So, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, William Tapley, the third eagle of the apocalypse, and his issues with the Denver International Airport.
In the news today, Denver's in trouble, man.
Oh, no.
Yes, in various ways. I cannot wait to play this. So I've been sitting on this all night. Now, I thought I was kind of early, and I think I kind of was early on this phenomenon, this new internet meme. But now it showed up on CNN this morning. It's showing up all over the place. It's blowing up. So I haven't quite scooped it, but I got in early enough, I think, that a lot of people still haven't seen this.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it until you pointed it out. So.
I already forgot his name. Something Tapping?
It's Eagle, isn't it?
Well,
it's,
his name, he calls himself the Third Eagle of the Apocalypse.
Third Eagle of the Apocalypse.
and the Second Prophet of the End Times or something. I forgot his real name, though. It's like Harold or Jerry? Jerry Turdbucket.
That might be it. Jerry Turdbucket.
Anyway, he
Pablo
says...
Pablo Van Nostrum.
He says, and I don't know if we'll play the entire thing, but he says that your Denver International Airport has got some splaining to do. So I'll just play part of this. We'll pause here and there to kind of discuss it. The phallic Denver Airport, ladies and gentlemen, here you go.
Welcome to Revelation Unraveled. I'm your host, William Tapley.
William Tapley, that's his name.
Tapley, okay, there you go.
William Tapley, but now he gives us his AKAs.
Also known as the Third Eagle of the Apocalypse and the Co-Prophet of the End Times.
Okay. Oh, pause for a second. Also known as the Third Eagle of the Apocalypse, a name I probably gave myself.
It's his WWE name.
Right. That's how you probably know me, is by the name I gave myself, the Third Eagle of the Apocalypse.
Yeah. I'm going to take Bret Hart down. You hear me? All right. Let's continue.
This program is a continuation of my series on the Denver International Airport, and especially the murals and the art contained therein. Because they are evil, they are signs of Satanism, and on this program, I will point out that many of them are phallic symbols.
Okay, wieners is what he means. Wieners. Mm-hmm. Got that? Okay. There's more.
Let's take a look at the first of these, which I have called on previous programs, the birth of the Antichrist. Now, in previous videos, I have pointed out that this is actually the figure of a naked woman, and the crotch is formed by a bird form.
Okay, now, this is obviously very visual.
Yes.
But there's like this, it's a mural that
it's
has...
a swan.
You know what, dude? I did this in one of his videos just for fun. Mm-hmm. In his videos, there are countless examples of phallic-looking things in his videos. Mm-hmm. Like, he does some of his videos with a curtain thing behind him, and if you look at it real close or squint your eyes just right, it looks like 12 wieners behind him. So
you can make anything look like anything.
Exactly, and which is kind of the point of why I'm playing any of this, but let's skip ahead here a little.
But right opposite the woman is a penguin, and a YouTuber pointed out to me that this sign on the penguin's cage constitutes a phallic symbol.
Okay, there's a little sign next to the penguin that says what species it is and when it was killed out or whatever, killed off. Mm-hmm. And the sign is slightly angled up from the belly of the thing, so it's supposed to look like a wiener. That's his claim number one, but it gets better.
And in fact, represents the male genitalia. Maybe if we take an even closer look, you can see what I am talking about. I have outlined this shape to make it a little more obvious for you. Notice that this is actually called a great auk, but it did stand upright like a penguin. It is now extinct. It became extinct in 1844. Please notice that the Latin name for this bird includes the word impanis. Now, that is not accidental.
The Latins were in on this.
The Latins were in on the international airport in freaking Denver's attempt to put wieners on everything.
I'm going to pick this bird because its Latin name contains the word penis. Technically, it contains the word penis, P-I-N-N-I-S.
Yeah, but let's go ahead and be as narrow-minded as possible and see everything through the glass of stupid simplicity. Here's more.
The artist chose this bird for a reason. And that's because the bird standing upright is phallic, the shape of the sign is phallic, and even the name is phallic.
Even your face is phallic.
As you approach the Denver airport by car, you are immediately struck by this gigantic statue of a blue fiberglass horse. Now, the shape of a rearing horse is not itself phallic, but the fact that the horse is rearing up would be very masculine.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I don't know. That horse is disturbing, though.
Well, of course it is. But
not
that's...
from a phallic point of view, but that thing has glowing red eyes. So when you approach at night, you just see these eyes and this gigantic blue horse. It's disturbing.
The blue red-eyed horse of the apocalypse is what it is. There's more.
Many of the shapes on the horse's tail and mane are phallic shapes. And of course, it is a masculine horse. It's very interesting to note that when this statue was almost finished, it fell on the sculptor and actually killed him. The horse was finished by his relatives before being assembled at the airport.
So
and
you're
his relatives
implying
themselves are phalluses.
He's implying that the horse made out of phallic symbols fell on the dude and killed him as some sort of act of revenge or whatever.
Right.
But then somebody else had to finish. Why didn't they get crushed too, you dumbass?
Right.
If there was some magical freaking, you're going to die because you're making phallic horse today. This kind of stuff just gives me gas.
Yes.
And I realize, you know, whatever. I can rage against YouTube idiots all I want, but.
Right.
He goes on and on,
Yeah, you need to see this video because the next one's very visual.
Yeah.
He describes the shape of the airport itself.
Yeah, a big aerial view, right? Like a big aerial view of a snowed-in airport.
Right.
And you can see the testicle areas and the shaft of the phallus. And it's the big baggage claim, like,
right,
connecting thing. And it's, you know what? He's right. There is kind of that shape. But you know what? I'm looking at three things on my desk that look like wieners that I didn't intend them to be.
Right. Yes.
I mean, here I've got, okay, no one can see this, but I have a bottle of water, an apple, and a Mario, here, I'll hold it up for the camera, a little Mario mushroom thing. And they're all sitting together.
Oh, looks the Mario mushroom thing. Jeez.
Looks like a wiener.
Yeah.
Satan's everywhere.
I have a pen on my desk. Oh, it's a phallus.
And look, the word pen is in it.
It's in the word penis.
Yeah, pen is.
Oh my gosh!
Telling you, Brian, the pen is on your desk. The pen is penis. All right. So I'm not going to play any more of that. But because you're right, it's very visual. But I went on to find out he had some other interesting predictions. Check out this one regarding the last Super Bowl. Now this has come and gone. He did the prediction before the Super Bowl aired.
Oh, really? Okay.
But since then. You know, well, you know how it went, so here it is.
Welcome to Revelation Unraveled. I'm your host, William Tapley, also known as the third eagle of the apocalypse and the co-prophet of the end times.
Right.
Now, tomorrow is Super Bowl Sunday, and as you know, I have predicted that it will not take place. And the reason I say that is because it is the 45th Super Bowl, and the number 44 is an end times number. 4 is an end times number, and 444 is a biblical end times number. In fact, for this same reason, I have predicted that Barack Obama will be our last elected president. Let's look at my prediction from last year. Next month, we will see the 44th Super Bowl. I believe that indicates that will be the last Super Bowl. So the question is, will God use this year's Super Bowl as a prophecy of the downfall of America and Barack Obama?
All right.
Oh, I hope that was his 44th video.
Oh, my gosh. And it came and went, of course. We had a Super Bowl. You know, the right team won and everything.
And the green was won by the Green Bay Phalluses.
The Green Bay Phalluses on that phallic symbol looking field they were on with that trophy they got. It looks like a giant penis. Pen is. Anyway, this guy's just killing me.
Oh,
so yes. I want to wrap it up with a nice song from the man, all right?
Oh, good. Yes.
This is. What's
the name of this song?
It's called Doom and Gloom, Brian.
Oh, no. This is going to be the most depressing song ever. It's called Doom and Gloom.
Yeah, and you might know you may know the artist formerly known as the Third Eagle of the Apocalypse and the co-prophet of the end times. And here's what he has to say about our future and the future for our children.
Doom and gloom coming soon. Listen to Third Eagle's tune. Doom and gloom. God is telling us the end is coming soon. Very soon. You'll see signs up in the sun and stars and moon. Doom and gloom. Very soon. Rapture comes at night or noon. Doom and gloom. Very soon. If you're ready, you will meet the bride and groom.
The bride and groom? Who's the bride and groom?
I have no idea.
That's some churchy thing, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever, man.
It's making Rebecca Black look fantastic right now.
He really
now.
Is, isn't he? Oh, wait till the end of the show because somebody else makes Rebecca Black sound fantastic. And he might be this guy.
So whatever I do next, just don't hate me.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll try not to hate you. You may know him from such things as...
It's a whole new world with a...
Still,
it's funny how that just never gets old.
No, never quite get over it. thank you. What's his name again? I already forgot his name. Third Eagle of the Apocalypse. Yeah, Eagle. Third Eagle. We'll just call him that.
T-G-O-T-A.
Togta.
Togota.
Togota. Thank you, Togota, for entertaining us. And you know what? He's dead serious, too. If you look at the comments in the his YouTube channel, people are, of course, flipping out left and right and calling him crazy and whatever. And he's very, you know, he's very serious and has all these predictions and phallic symbols all over Denver. And, you know, it's all terrible for him.
Now, is he from Denver or does he live somewhere else and he just kind of picked out?
Don't know. He looks... Oh, excuse me. Definitely looks like he lives somewhere in the
mountains,
the Rockies.
Right. That song is performed on a Casio right in front of a beautiful sweeping vista.
Yeah, gorgeous.
Phalluses.
Yeah, phalluses everywhere. I don't know if he's looked lately, but that tree right behind him, great big boner tree.
This is the best of the morning stream.
For our next clip, we go to the Frog Pants forums, and there have never been any shortage of requests for clips of Scott Fletcher. You know, if TMS was a turkey, Scott Fletcher would be the amazing gravy that makes that turkey oh so delicious. So on the forums, we had a Scott Fletcher mashup posted by Depth Persuasion. It's a mashup of two clips, the first from show number 103 and the second comes from show 120. These might sound a little wacky out of context, but honestly, they're pretty crazy even in context, which makes them so awesome. So here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, the great Scott Fletcher.
This is your Runkeeper workout summary. Total distance, 2.2 In-N-Out burgers and 5 quarts of Häagen-Dazs ice cream. Total time, 2 minutes, 43 seconds.
Hello there.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. You?
I'm okay.
That's good.
Are you good?
Yes, I am good. I just said I was.
No, you didn't. I said I was.
So, you are a robot?
No. My name is Cleverbutt.
Yes, you are a robot. And you are named Mrs. Cleverbutt.
I am a robot.
Yes, I know.
Together, we are robot.
I'm not a robot. I'm a unicorn.
But you said earlier that you were a robot.
I did not.
I thought you did.
You were mistaken, which is odd since memory shouldn't be a problem for you.
I've answered all of your questions.
No, you haven't.
What is God to you?
Not everything.
Not everything could be something. For example, not everything could be half of something, which is still something, and therefore not nothing.
Very true.
I would like to imagine it is.
Do you believe in God?
Yes, I do.
So you're a Christian?
No, I'm not.
But you say you are not helpful. Therefore, you are a meanie?
Blah, blah, blah.
That does not make sense.
Don't you want to have a body?
Sure.
Au revoir.
So in addition to Scott Fletcher, the grand universe of Frog Pants would never be complete without the subject of our next clip. So by now, if you're a frequent listener of the show, you're probably familiar with the Stump a Trek Nerd segment featuring Daryl from This Week in Trek. Let's step into the Wayback Machine and journey back to the very first Trek segment. This is actually called Stump a Trek Fan, all the way back from show number 17. This is quite possibly the quickest performance Daryl has ever had, or at the very least, one of the quickest. So here we go, from show 17, it's Stump a Trek Fan.
We're going to do something kind of weird, and okay. I need to kind of, I was going to sort of be more prepped for this, but let me pull something up real quick. We're going to do a new segment that's kind of random and out there, and no one expects it kind of thing, and I got to find the right thing for it. How about this? All right, this is what this is. This is something I'm going to call Stump a Trek Fan.
Okay, cool.
And the Trek fan that we're going to call is the most Trekkiest of Trek fans that I know. His name
Brian
is...
Brian Dunaway.
No, he's not Brian Dunaway. It is Daryl, and it is Daryl the Tip Giver. Remember Daryl the Tip Giver?
Oh, very good. Yeah. I do remember Daryl the Tip Giver. Very good.
And I'm going to add him by calling his phone number. and we're going to stump him with a piece of trivia he has not hitherto for been informed of.
I love this. This is great.
Hello. Good morning.
The phone has rung. I have answered the phone.
Is that how you always answer the phone?
No, I see your number.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, it's my little Skype number.
It's the red phone. It's the president. It's the direct line to the president.
It's a Cleveland phone.
Hello, Peter.
Daryl, welcome to the show. I know we haven't done this yet, but you understand the rules, right? I'm going to throw a trivia question at you, and you're going to try to answer it.
I have no idea what was going to happen, so we'll just do it how it goes.
All right, here goes, man. Ultimate Trek fan, here's your question. In Gene Roddenberry's original treatment for Star Trek, what was the name of the starship? And here is a multiple choices, okay? So I'm going to give you a little hint.
Oh, who needs these multiple choices? That's a Yorktown.
Oh, he got it,
wow.
Dude. All right, so the answers were, the choice was Enterprise, Yorktown, Plymouth, or the Reliant. And you are correct, sir. It was the USS Yorktown. That doesn't sound nearly as funny when Chekhov says it, so I see why they changed it. Anyway, nice job. You win absolutely nothing except a chance to come do this again real soon.
Oh, that's it? I should have waited for the choices. It's over already?
It's already over, man. That's it. The goal is I'm going to call you every day until I'm sick of this and ask you what and give you a hard trivia question about Star Trek, and you so far have shown yourself to be a worthy opponent.
Okay. I look forward to the next one, then.
All right. Well, here's the part where I hang up on you. Beep! All right, he's out of here. I'm looking forward to that.
Daryl's great.
Daryl is great. He's a great
guy. Sounds like we woke him up, but it's
well, it's early there.
It is earlier there. That's
7:13 there where he lives. He's in beautiful Seattle. Washington State.
Yes.
Seattle.
For our next segment, we have another request from the Frog Pants forums. This was requested by Seahawk Jim C. So it's always fun when Scott does math, but what's equally fun is when Scott does words. Well, show 123 had a story about guns missing from factories, and somehow the words, or at the very least a word, managed to get the best of our favorite Frog Pants host. So here you go, Seahawk Jim C. Scott does words from episode 123.
This is a related story to Burning Man. At least 16,000 guns have gone missing from factories since 2009. Just kidding. There's no connection at all.
Probably has more in combination with the Juggalos than the Burning Man.
Right. Exactly. Huge cases of orange drink. What'd you call it again? What's the drink?
Faygo from Michigan. Thank you, chat room.
Gone missing. Several thousand firearms, 16,485 to be exact, have left gun factories in the U.S. without a record of being legally sold over the past 2.5 years. So just in 2.5 years, nearly 17,000 guns unaccounted for. That according to a new study from the Brady Center to prevent gun violence. Well, of course. You don't think they're a little one-sided on this deal, do you?
Right.
What are the numbers more like? Well, okay, it's just 12, but still.
But it could have been 16,000. If each of these was in a crate with 12 other guns.
Yeah. You never know who on either side. I don't like statistics when it comes from one of these sides who benefits from having a heavy number like that.
Yes.
Let's see. They did arithmetic based on data from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives. I didn't know they added and explosives on there. Did they? Is that that's awesome. They're no longer the BA. What is it? They used to, whatever
the
it was called.
ATF.
ATF. Right? Now they're the ATF&E.
Yeah.
The ATF&E, dude.
The ATF&E.
Basically, the Federal Bureau of Everything Fun, dating from the beginning of 2009 to the middle of 2011. At that rate, an average of about 18 guns go missing from factories every day, on average. So, I don't like that at all. Mm-hmm. I also don't... I mean, who knows? Oh, a January report from the same center found that about 62,000 guns have gone missing from the inventories of gun dealers. Never heard of that. Oh, inventories.
Does pronunciation inventories.
I can't read today. That is the most embarrassing word flub I have ever done. You know, the inventories, Brian.
Yes, the inventories.
Oh, you know what? We got to stay late this weekend and do inventory.
Oh. It sounds like the way the English pronounce inventory. Cyrus, will you please stay late and do the inventory, please?
Cyrus.
Yeah, that was apparently some name I could come up with.
Oh, my gosh. That is an embarrassing word to mess
please,
up.
Once you're done in the urinal, please go and take a
urinal, inventory. Exactly, dude. We need to do inventories. You're so right about that.
This is the best of the morning stream.
For our final clip, we turn to the resident therapist of TMS, Scott's amazing sister, Wendy. So while you're gathered with family for Thanksgiving, perhaps you have a crazy relative that's really into conspiracies. Well, never fear, because Wendy has you covered. A little while back, Wendy did an awesome Therapy Thursday segment about conspiracy theories that was a lot of fun to listen to. It's pretty long, so I'm not going to play the whole segment, but if you'd like to check it out in its entirety, it's from episode number 126. So here we go, Wendy Dunford with Therapy Thursday and conspiracies.
So where does this kind of thinking come from, and what does one do either tangentially as the person who knows the person or the person themselves? What can they do to kind of simmer down when it comes to conspiracy?
At the risk of offending anyone who is a conspiracy theorist, I'm just going to tell you what the literature says, okay? How's that for...
That's perfect. Disclaimer.
I'm handling it.
Yeah.
Okay, disclaimer. There is a great book if you really want the science of all of this. I'll tell you that real quick. It's called The Believing Brain, From Ghosts to God, by Michael Shermer, S-H-E-R-M-E-R. And he talks a lot about, what actually happens in our heads that causes us to believe things. And to believe them and so strongly. This is sort of the basis of the biology kind of behind this.
Right.
So that's a good book.
Right.
But then on top of that, there's a lot of stuff that psychologists have figured out over the years that we do that make this at all even possible, right? So I think to start out with, we all want to be right and belong, okay? So there's some sort of like fundamental human needs that play into conspiracy theories. Having something important, having some knowledge. I mean, you go back to like kindergarten, junior high, like it's just a jump from kindergarten to junior high. But, you know, it's that, you know, being in the know, having some access to maybe what the cool kids have access to or, you know, that kind of foundational thing. You can look in childhood and see a lot of stuff that just kind of makes sense, you know, and as we mature and we think we've moved past all of those things, you know, there still is some of that. Okay. So you've got I have some insider information, and we also have our media issue, which is like, is that even real?
Right,
you know?
Right.
So there's some of that kind of creeps in, and then there's some other psychological things that are happening. So I'll just name a few real quick that, might be helpful to understand. One is patternicity. Sounds like a totally made up word.
Yeah, it does.
But basically, it's tending to find meaningful patterns in random stuff. So, for example, say you everyone's done this, right? You've bought a car.
Sure.
And then everywhere you go for the next 2 years, you see your car. I mean, it is everywhere.
Right. Oh, that's a great one. Yeah, you can't sort of unsee your car now. Yeah.
You cannot unsee it. And the thing is, you start to think, is this a message from the universe? Well, no. It's that you brought to the forefront of your conscious that car because you bought it, and now you're seeing everyone else drive it. It's and that like can happen with, like, say, an old movie. Someone mentions an old movie at the, you know, the water tank. What's that called? Where you drink at work.
Water cooler?
Oh, the water cooler.
The water cooler, thank you. The huge trough that everyone goes to. Sorry.
Everyone meet around the water tank. We're talking about last night's episode of Lost. Let's go.
Yeah, so, for example, and then you see a billboard that talks about one of those actors, or you read three articles in the next 2 days and you think, wow, look at all this, you know, this piling up to show me that I apparently, you know, but you can find meaning in some patterns that are probably always there. There's probably always been those cars around you, but you're starting to see them. Okay. So that's one thing. Then there's what's called agenticity. And it's basically the bent to believe the world is controlled by invisible intentional agents. So here's the thing about most conspiracy theories is that everything goes off without a hitch. Everyone keeps their secrets. And I don't know if any of you have been around real people trying to pull off a project like in your neighborhood or anywhere. It doesn't happen. I mean, there's too many human flaws. There's too many consequences or, you know, scenarios that something backfires. But in all conspiracy theories, as you'll note, everything runs perfectly.
Yeah, the Illuminati, and the freaking,
totally.
The thousands-year-old groups and organizations that have not said a word, and they all take this oath, and it never breaks, and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Right, right. And the thing is, it's not to say there haven't been secret bands of whoever doing this or that. There is some, obviously those things exist and have existed at different times, but none of them, you know, are going to outlast and be perfect and never reveal a thing. I mean, we have some that we know of. We have the Masons, who are pretty quiet about what they do. But they just, you know, give money to hospitals and stuff. And maybe they're secretly controlling all of us, whatever. But, you know, you're assuming that there's this, that's what makes it so sinister, is how perfect they've run everything. Well, that's just not how it works. But you have to, that's part of this. You have to believe that it's controlled by something you can't see, and some higher power of, you know, some group that's running it all. Okay, and then there's
does it also help your case if it's something that not only that you can't see or prove or disprove? I mean, doesn't that actually help you have your theory? In other words,
absolutely.
What's the word? It's kind of like, well, if I can't see it, therefore it must be really true, because then no one's going to ever, I don't know, I'm not explaining myself very well, but it seems like
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. It's called the backfire effect. Mm. And what that is essentially, there's a great blog if anyone's interested, You Are Not So Smart, a celebration of self-delusion. And it basically, the guy talks about all the ways that, you know, this stuff happens in our heads and how we confirm our self-delusions. And basically, newspapers do this all the time. They'll put a correction somewhere small, you know, later, like, oops, like, here's one I found that cracked me up. It's basic. We need to make a correction of our last paper. Walmart police receive a report of a newborn infant found in a trash can. Upon investigation, officers discover it was only a burrito. Sorry for the confusion.
Oh,
but
man.
Guess what? Everybody read that Walmart found an infant dead in the trash can, and they could read, even though this is in tiny print, they could read the correction, but guess what? They don't believe it was a burrito. They now think it's a cover-up of the first story.
Right, because now they're like, oh,
the dude found a burrito.
Yeah, we can't tell people it was a burrito. They're not going to believe us. Oh, tell them anyway, and meet us in the secret room for the thing we're going to all do.
Yeah, so let me just read these points really fast, because these are important. So people who believe in one theory tend to believe in many others. Mm. They're not usually just like, I believe in one. They kind of see everything as a lot more than that. This is interesting, a strong association between income and belief levels. So the better off people are, the less likely they are to believe in conspiracy theories. Mm. Maybe because the world's working for them.
Sure.
They're getting a paycheck, so they're like, I don't need to worry that the
don't
government's
the
out. Yeah, a little bit. Don't want to rock the boat. This is, I'm part of the upper echelon of secret people.
Right.
But this might also be chalked up to education, because obviously there's a correlation with income and education level. Instability makes us uncomfortable, and we want that predictability, that safe world kind of thing. And it, as much as it shows us, you know, oh, look how this weird stuff, it's an illusion of safety and predictability. And then they often mutate over time. I'm sure you've seen this. And in light of any new or contradicting evidence. And obviously they usually require something in the news to peg it to. Like, I'm sure you've heard the government control the weather, right? Mm-hmm. And so they prevented a hurricane from hitting New York on September 11th in order so the attacks could happen. So really, like, if that were the case, can we stop the fires in Texas? Can we, like,
I love that one. That one's fantastic. Like, that, those are the kinds, and there are people, I realize as I say it, there are people that full on buy this stuff. So right. What I'm laughing at is something, somebody else's very serious belief, but that's so awesome that you've somehow come to the conclusion that it's that elaborate. And if it's that elaborate, the sky's the limit, dude. You could say anything. Yeah. Well, since we control the weather, we also happen to be able to control the moon. And on the dark side over there, there's a big colony of governments and conspiracists that actually live on the moon. And twice a day, they go out and pee in the wind, and that causes the Earth to, you know, whatever. Like, I just love how that just goes all down this rabbit hole and just has no way out. But people are just, they're just going to go down with the ship, whether we believe them or not. They're going to hold on to this for dear life.
Well, and that's where you can't argue with a conspiracy theorist. That is the absolute nature of this problem for people who are thinking straight. When you love someone who's a conspiracy theorist, you cannot have a normal conversation, and there's a reason. So there is one guy, the guy I was mentioning from Canada, who is like an expert in every conspiracy theory surrounding 9/11. He has, I mean, spent his life since then being an expert, and he said, it drives him crazy because he can't win an argument with a college kid about it. And the reason he cited was that what the conspiracy theorists tend to have a train of argument that is like the opposite of what Plato would have you do. Like basically it's they will say some tidbit fact that like you've never heard of. So you're like, what? And they'll start out less crazy, okay? And then so maybe you have an answer to that, like, well, that doesn't make sense, or, you know, where's the evidence of that? Well, then they shoot out another one. And if any of you have had this experience, they shoot out another one, and they shoot out another one. And it is not discourse. It is talking points that they have spent way too much time thinking and talking about that you haven't. So you're like, I don't know what you're saying. And then when you have any evidence that's contradictory, they come back with something else that's not addressing that point, not the fact that we all know it's right. Something else. And so this circular argument keeps you always out of it. And again, remember, they're not going to change their mind. Anything you give them that's evidence will only confirm their original bias. So yeah. It feels kind of futile, right? Like, what do you even do?
It seems like
hit them with a pan.
Seems like the event. Seems like the event. Also, the more traumatic and or chaotic it was at the time it happened, the easier it is to build this stuff around. So 9/11 is a great way to do that. The shooting of John F. Kennedy was a great way to build a lot of conspiracy because it was just so much chaos. And you're left with so many pieces to the puzzle that seem like they might be important when maybe they're not connected at all, yet they're easy to glom onto because they were there and the guy's got footage and the other dude was standing over here. And I'm pretty sure that photo shows a shadow in the woods over there. We don't know who that guy is, if it's even a guy. And, you know, so it seems like the more crazy the event, the easier it is to sort of, you know, nobody talks about. There's no conspiracy theory about Janet Jackson's boob getting hung out in the middle of the Super Bowl because it just happened and it was immediate and it was obvious and we were done.
Right.
You know, if it was something crazy where it was a huge, you know, riot and suddenly a boob popped onto the screen, everybody would have a different feeling maybe, or maybe we'd have some conspiracy theory. It's actually kind of a terrible example, and I actually regret bringing it up, but you know what I mean.
And you're milking it.
Right. I'm milking that boob for all I can get. I hope everybody listening, if you're a conspiracy theorist, hey, whatever. Whatever level you're at, you know, I like JFK, the movie, as much as the next guy, but I didn't necessarily buy into everything it was trying to tell me. And that's kind of how I approach these sort of things. I find it kind of interesting in a weird way. It's like these 9/11 conspiracies. I'm like, oh, that's a weird take. Let's read about this for a minute. I think there's some, you can have some healthy interaction with just exploring what other people are trying to say about things, but try to check your, you know, just make sure your brain's on and pay attention and take things with a grain of salt and realize that most stuff is in the middle somewhere, you know, most things usually. It's usually not the extremes. And hopefully we've, you know, I don't know. Like you said, if there are people out there right now who, you know, believe in some serious conspiracy right now, we are not going to change their minds today.
No.
And I don't even
care. We're actually just confirming what they already believe.
Correct. That's all we're doing, at least psychologically speaking. Well, awesome stuff. Wendy, thanks for hanging out with us today. I hope your week is free of conspiracy.
It is, actually, usually.
All right. Well, have fun. Say hi to the kids.
I don't know, though.
Yeah. Go have a Denford donut for us, will you?
I will. All right. I will.
See ya.
So that's all we've got for this Thanksgiving edition of the Best of the Morning Stream. I hope you enjoyed all the segments, and don't forget, if you'd like to suggest your favorite clips, you can check out the official show forums. Just go to frogpants.com/TMS and click on the official forums link. A few things I wanted to mention before wrapping up today. Brian Ibbett and Coverville, tons of stuff going on. So on Thanksgiving night, he'll have the extra long Beatles special, so make sure to check that out. And then the very next day on Black Friday at noon, 24-hour cover-thon. It's going to be awesome. You must check it out. Rumor has it that there will be special guests, frog pants personalities, and all kinds of fun. Plus, it's for a great cause. They're taking donations for Alzheimer's research, ALS, and the show itself, so don't miss it. Also, be sure to check out the new Tadpoolery podcast. It's on Fridays at 8 a.m. Mountain Time, and you can hear it live on the GnomeWise Shoutcast stream at vtwproductions.com. A big thanks to Scott Fletcher for his awesome voice work. Thanks to Scott and Brian for the awesome shows they pump out each and every week. That's going to do it for now, but happy Thanksgiving to all of you out there. Have a fantastic holiday, and we'll see you next time on the Best of the Morning Stream.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
I look forward to your report, Mr. Broccoli.